I've gone through and read those and returned them to you through the Dropbox with a few comments. I thought what we would do tonight is spend our time on research methods. Mm-hmm. I think that's the one area that, if there's one area that causes students' problem on the comprehensive exam, it's research methods. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the question that you had and go through it step by step. The nice thing about the research methods questions that we use now, there are lots of different ways you can answer the questions. So when you're talking about, you know, your research question, there are probably 1,000 different ways that you could write a research question that would work for the problem. There are probably 5 to 10 different types of research designs that you could make work as well. Hundreds of different types of ways in which you could write your variables. So I like this type of question because it requires that you take the information and you apply it. And at the end of the day, that's what we want to do in a program like this. It really is all about applied learning. So let's go through the question and then talk about different ways in which you could answer the question. And by way of doing that, we'll kind of do a little review of research methods as well. So here, as you know, you've got this health agencies providing preventive health services to patients on an anonymous basis without regard to income. First important piece of that already is the word anonymous. Whenever you see anonymous, that should be something that you underline, because that's going to be probably an important part of your answer to the question. So it's providing these services to patients on an anonymous basis without regard to income. Patients are not required to pay for these services or use insurance. Clinic is funded entirely through grants and donations. While the clinic does not keep records of the names of patients, since it's anonymous, it does assign unique number identifiers to each patient and is thus able to maintain records. There's your next really important piece of information. It's anonymous, but each patient receives a unique number, which means that the agency is then able to link up with individual patients. So you're able to know patient number 37 got these services at this point in time. And that's really important because that's going to have a big impact upon whatever type of research design you decide to use. So anonymous services, but they are able to track those patients with those numbers. One of the primary programs that the clinic provides is a childhood obesity prevention program. It provides education and monitoring of healthy eating habits for children. It serves 5,000 children per year, and there are approximately 75,000 children under age 18 living in the city. The reason why that information is given to you is for the sampling part of your answer. Because obviously not every single child in the city is being served by this program. We probably would want the good impacts of the program to benefit all the children in the city, but only 5,000 out of 75,000 are actually participating in that program. So what that should alert you to is that the largest possible sample you could have would be the 5,000 children who are participating. You want to hopefully be able to generalize your results from these 5,000 participants to the entire target population of children in the city, which is 75,000. So it means you're going to have to be dealing with a sample that is obviously smaller than your entire population of interest, which means you're going to have to do some type of sampling. To continue receiving funding, the clinic must demonstrate the effectiveness of the program. And there's your really big piece of information, the word effectiveness. Obviously, the clinic wants to keep getting funding for this program in order to convince the donors to continue donating money. They have to show the donors that the program is effective. So the goal of your research here is to measure the effectiveness of the program. And so as you know from your research classes, one of the very first places you start with research is, what's your goal? What's your purpose? What are you trying to achieve with this research? Well, the goal, the purpose of this research is to measure the effectiveness of the childhood obesity prevention program. So effectiveness is your goal. So if your goal is effectiveness, then your next step is I ask you to develop a research question. As you know from your research methods classes, research questions can take on a lot of different forms depending upon the purpose of your research. Some questions are descriptive questions. A descriptive question would be useful if your goal is just to describe a situation. So, for instance, if you just want to use a very descriptive research question, you could ask something as simple as, what types of children use this program? So you can kind of get the demographic profile. So what you're trying to find out is maybe the income level of children using the program, or the education level of the parents who send their children to this program. So you're basically just trying to find out, take a snapshot, like with a camera, you take a snapshot of a situation. This situation being, who's using this program? That's a very descriptive type of question. How many children are using the program? Well, we know it's 5,000, but how many children are using the program? That, again, is a very descriptive type of question. You're describing the current situation. You're describing the children who are currently using this program. So that would be a descriptive type of research question. Here, for this question, for this scenario, our goal is effectiveness, measuring the effectiveness. So for measuring the effectiveness, we're probably going beyond just describing who's using the program, or even how many people are using the program. If we want to find out effectiveness, we're trying to find out the effectiveness of the program on whatever the goal of the program is. It's a childhood obesity prevention program. So obviously the goal of the program is to prevent childhood obesity. So we want to see how effective the program is at preventing childhood obesity. We're probably going to want to go beyond descriptive type of research question. A second type of research question we can ask is an associational question, where we ask, is there an association or is there a relationship between two variables? So we might want to ask, is participation in the program associated with lower rates of childhood obesity? So is participation in the program, this variable, participation in the program, associated with this other variable, which is less childhood obesity? And we oftentimes, just as an aside, when we measure childhood obesity, we oftentimes use the body mass index. It's called the BMI. And it's a body mass index, a number that we can generate for each person. And above a certain BMI, we consider that person to be obese. And so if it's, I forget what the standards are now, but it's like 30 or 32. So if a BMI above 32, the person's considered to be obese. So what we can do is look at, is there an association between participating in the program and perhaps lower BMI, which is an indicator of less obesity? That would be an associational type of question, which is useful for us. It doesn't necessarily completely answer the question of effectiveness, though, because it could be the situation where participants in the program happen to be less obese, but it may not be the program that's causing that. There could be something else that could be causing them to be less obese. You know, maybe children, you know, parents who take their children to the program also are more likely to take their children to other activities as well. Maybe there's more engaged parents. So the children are doing other activities that have nothing whatsoever to do with participation in this program. That could lead to less obesity. And so we're not necessarily saying the program is causing lower rates of obesity. We're just saying the two are somehow related to each other. So it's a more limited type of research question than what we probably would really want to look at. Give you another example of an associational question. Another example of an associational question could be, are program participants less likely to be obese than non-participants? Just another way of phrasing it. So are program participants less likely to be obese than non-participants? That would be a relatively easy question to answer. If you're going to try and answer the question, are participants less likely to be obese than non-participants? You would probably take a sample of participants, a sample of non-participants, and you measure their body mass index between the two samples to see if the average body mass index of the two samples is significantly different from each other. So if you end up with non-participants have a body mass index of 32, participants have a body mass index of 26, is that a large enough difference to be statistically significant to show you that participants have a lower body mass index than non-participants? Again, this is another way of asking kind of an associational question. But our goal was not to describe, and it's not really association either. Our goal here is effectiveness. And whenever you're looking at effectiveness, you're looking at, is the goal, the program achieving its goals? And that's what we want to see with public programs. Our public programs are effective if they are achieving their goals. Well, this childhood obesity prevention program, its primary goal is probably to reduce the instances of childhood obesity, to try and prevent childhood obesity. So is the program effective at reducing childhood obesity? When you ask a question like that, you're getting into the third type of research question, which is a causal question. So anytime, just, you know, again, this is good shorthand, if you will, for these questions in the future. Whenever you see the goal of the question, the goal of the scenario is effectiveness, you're probably talking a causal research question. So again, for a causal research question, does participation in the childhood obesity prevention program decrease the likelihood of obesity? Does this decrease that? Does participation in the program decrease the chances or the likelihood that a child will be obese? That is a causal research question, because we're saying participation is causing this to happen. Participation in the program is causing children to be less obese or less likely to be obese. That's a causal type of research question. So, since we're looking at the effectiveness of the program, chances are we want to have a causal research question like this. So, does participation in the program reduce childhood obesity? Something like that. Or, if you want a more nuanced question, you say, how does participation in the program decrease childhood obesity? Either of those would be fine. So either of those types of questions will work fine as a causal research question. So here, that's what we would be looking for, is a causal type of research question. And I can come pretty close to guaranteeing you that on your comprehensive exam in February, we'll be looking for a causal research question. So chances are that's what you're going to want to give, is a causal research question. And your questions on the exam next month are going to look like this. The scenario may be different, but you'll be asked to do the same things that you're asked to do here. So you want to develop a causal research question. Does this cause that? Does this result in that? Does that make sense? When you put together that causal research question, obviously what you're doing is you are postulating a relationship between variables. You're saying this variable is causing this variable. As you know, the variable that causes the change is the independent variable. The variable that is being changed is the dependent variable. And it's a, you know, very basic point of your research methods course. I'm sure that you covered over and over again in research methods. But despite the number of times we cover it in the class, every time there's a question like this on the comprehensive exam, at least one or two people reverse their variables. So remember, the independent variable causes the change. The dependent variable is the one that is being changed. So in this instance, your independent variable is what?
The weight of problem.
The program, yeah. Some measure of the program. And there are a couple different ways that you could do this, a couple different ways you could approach this. Like I said, lots of different ways that you can do all these different parts of the question. But One way you could approach your independent variable is to measure it just as the program itself. So you could say, we're going to measure it as the program. So our independent variable, we're going to look at when the program came into play, when the program was implemented, when the program first started. So let's say the program, just making this up, let's say the program started in 2006. What we could do is we could measure childhood obesity rates before the program was implemented in 2006 and then after the program was implemented in 2006. If you're doing that, you're measuring childhood obesity before and after the program was implemented, the independent variable is the program. It's basically what we call program existence. Before 2006, it didn't exist. After 2006, it did exist. We're measuring it as program existence. That's one way you can measure the independent variable. Another way you could measure it is participation in the program. So we could measure these people participate in the program, these people do not participate in the program. So our independent variable could be all those people who participate in the program, we're going to give them a score of 1, indicating that they participate in the program. All those people who do not participate in the program, we'll give them a score of 0. So the person gets a 1, that means they're a participant. They get a 0, it means they're not a participant. So we're measuring the independent variable as participation in the program. So again, those are just a couple different ways that you can measure your independent variable. Either the program existence or participation in the program. Either of those approaches, I think, would be fine. You can do it either way. But in whatever way you do it, your independent variable is going to be some measure of the childhood obesity prevention program itself. And for most of these types of questions on the comprehensive exam, that's usually how it's going to be. Is the independent variable is probably going to be the program itself that you're trying to measure the effectiveness of. So the independent variable is some measure of the childhood obesity prevention program. Your dependent variable would be what? What would your dependent variable be?
The children weight.
It could be, yeah. The weight of children, the body mass index of children, some measure of childhood obesity. Right? Because that's what the program is trying to do, is reduce childhood obesity. So the dependent variable would be some measure of childhood obesity. Whether it be the weight of the children, whether it be their body mass index, it's childhood obesity.
Could be quality of the food.
What's that?
Quality of the food.
Could be. You know, there are lots of different ways that you can measure. The quality of the food, certainly. If you're looking at the food that they're consuming and does participation in the program affect the food that they consume, absolutely. Your dependent variable would be then the quality or the type of food that they're consuming. And yeah, just underscores there are lots of ways you can do this. So that's your dependent variable.
I have a question about the independent and independent variables. Mm-hmm. Do we need to find only the variables and the question of the research and determine if it's like dependent or independent? Or like in this case, for example, in my question, I was asking, is the health and nutrition reports decrease the obese children weight. Mm-hmm. So the variables for me, the independent variable was the health and nutrition report.
Correct.
Right.
Right.
Do I need to say the independent variable is the program or the health and nutrition report?
That's fine. If you're saying the program, part of the program are these health and nutrition reports, you would make that your independent variable, that's fine. Yeah, so that's absolutely fine. But the important thing, and this is true for any causal research question, is you've got your independent variable, whether it be the program, whether it be the reports produced by the program, you've got your dependent variable of childhood obesity. The important part of any causal research is controlling for any other explanation for why obesity can change. So if we're looking at, is this program or all these reports that are being prepared, are they effective at reducing childhood obesity? We may see childhood obesity rates go down, and it may or may not be because of the program. Something else may be causing those obesity rates to go down. So, you know, think about, here's an example. You've got these 5,000 children who are participating in this program. We measure their obesity rates, and their obesity rates have gone down after they started participating in the program. But maybe at the same time as they started this program, maybe at school, they started a more active, you know, physical education program. So now these kids are playing ball and doing all this stuff outside that they never used to do. That could contribute to lower rates of obesity, regardless of what's going on in this program that this clinic is providing. So something else is causing their obesity rates to go down other than just the program. The trick with a causal research question to see if this program is truly effective at reducing childhood obesity is you have to control for the other things that could be causing obesity rates to go down. Those other things that could be causing obesity rates to go down other than our program, that's what we call our control variables. So those are the variables we would have to control for. So again, for in this instance, we'll just say our independent variable, we'll call it participation in the program. And our dependent variable is obesity rates. In order to isolate the relationship between participation in the program and a reduction in obesity rates, we would have to control for maybe a new physical education program in the schools. And we'll have to control for the fact that maybe they're just having more activity at school than they've ever had before. Maybe there's some, you know, healthy eating program going on at the school other than the program they're participating with in the clinic. So we have maybe control for that as well, the presence of a healthy eating program in the schools. Those are what we would call control variables. We would have to take those control variables into account to isolate the real relationship between this childhood obesity prevention program and rates of childhood obesity. Now, the expectation on a comprehensive exam is not that you would put together a complete full list of control variables. I mean, there could be 20, 30, 50 control variables. We don't expect you to do that. What I really expect you to be able to do is identify your independent variable, your dependent variable, and maybe one or two control variables. And that's going to be good enough. Because I just want to see that you understand what a control variable is and you can develop a control variable. So again, here it might be the physical education program in the school. That would be a control variable. So we'd say our primary independent variable is participation in the program. Our dependent variable, rates of childhood obesity. Our control variable, physical education programs in the school. That would be good enough then to answer your variables part of the question. Those control variables are variables that we are controlling so that we can basically pull them out. We can say, okay, we're gonna pull them out of the relationship so that we can truly see what the real relationship is between our independent variable of participation in the program and our dependent variable of rates of childhood obesity. And the classic example of this type of situation is, we've always said that, you know, there could be a relationship between crime rates in Detroit, Michigan, and water level in the Nile River. That is, crime rates in Detroit, Michigan change, water level in the Nile River changes as well. And then we see them changing together, and it's true. As one changes, the other changes. Does that mean that the water level in the Nile River is causing crime rates in Detroit, Michigan to change? No. They really have nothing to do with each other. The real thing that's causing a change in both is, you might want to venture a guess, what could cause the water level in the Nile River to change? What could cause crime rates in Detroit, Michigan to change? What do you think might cause the water level in the river to change?
Rain.
Rain. A season. Yeah, the season has an impact on it. So you have to get a rainy season, the water level goes up. If you get dry season, the water level goes down. Well, you know what? Crime rates in Detroit, Michigan act the same way. That in a rainy season or in the middle of winter, when you know, I grew up not far from Detroit, Michigan, and I'll tell you, not that I ever robbed any houses, but if I was going to go out and steal something from a house, I wouldn't do it in January when it's 10 below zero and you've got a foot of snow on the ground. So crime rates go down in the winter. In the summertime, when it's 80 degrees and sunny and really warm at night and people leave their windows open, crime rates go up. So the season affects crime rates in Detroit. The season affects the water level in the Nile River, but it does so independently. If you didn't take into account season as a control variable, you would be wrong in saying that crime rates in Detroit, Michigan and water level in the Nile River are related. They're not. It's really that third variable, that season variable. So that would be a variable in that relationship you would have to control for. Once you take season out, you see that there really is no relationship between your two variables. Similar type of thing here. So our control variable will be physical education program in the school. If we take physical education program in the school out, and we control for that, we may actually find out that this program is not having any difference, not making any difference in childhood obesity rates, because the real impact was coming from the physical education program in the school. So again, you're going to identify, here's my independent variable, here's my dependent variable, and then here's maybe one or two variables I would like to control for to truly isolate the relationship between participation in the childhood obesity program and my dependent variable of childhood obesity rates. That make sense? The next thing that you would have to talk about is your research design. And I'm sure you spent a lot of time in research methods class talking about research designs. The research design looks at how we're going to deal with our cases, how we deal with our data. And you probably learned in your research methods course that there are different types of research designs. The way in which I usually like to present the information when I teach research is that there are different categories. One category of a research design is what's known as an experimental design. Experimental designs allow us to randomly assign our cases. So, you know, here what we might want to do is we might want to say, well, if we want to see the impact that participation in the program is having on rates of obesity, we could randomly assign a certain number of children to participate in the program and randomly assign a certain number to not participate in the program. That way, then what we can do is we can measure the obesity before and after participation. So we basically be doing what's called a classic experimental design. So we randomly assign some to participate in the obesity prevention program, randomly assign some to not participate. We measure the obesity before participation, after participation. That would be a classic experimental type of design. That is a very strong type of research design. It's usually a good type of research design if you can use it. The problem in the real world of public administration and policy is we often cannot use experimental designs because we cannot randomly assign people. So we'll change this up a little bit and then give you another hypothetical. Let's say you have a situation where it's a, we'll call it a direct cash transfer program. So the state of California has this program where, I'm making this up, where they used to, they don't anymore, where they will give a direct cash transfer. So they'll give money directly to income-eligible families. So we'll just say if a family of four has an income level under $15,000 per year, the state of California will give that family $500 per month. Again, this type of thing we're making up. So what you want to do as a researcher is you want to measure the effectiveness of that program, the effectiveness of giving $500 per month to these eligible families. Well, if you wanted to do an experimental design, You would say, well, we will take, of all these eligible families, we will take half of them and randomly decide that half of them get $500 per month. And then randomly take another half and say, you don't get $500 per month. That would be a classic experimental design. Randomly assign some to participate, randomly assign others not to participate. What's the problem with doing that? What's that? I think you're right.
Maybe it's not fair.
You're exactly right. It's not fair. It's not ethical. If all these families are eligible, they're legally eligible for this $500 per month, and we're going to say, well, these people aren't going to get it for the sake of our research, that's not fair. It's not ethical. And it's probably not legal either. I mean, if they're legally entitled to this money, they're entitled to the money. They should get the money. So in that situation, you couldn't use a classic experimental design because you can't randomly assign some people to participate and randomly assign some other people not to participate. Here, in this example, you might be able to do it. Now, you can argue about how ethical it is. It may not be ethical to deny some of these children access to this childhood obesity prevention program. But if you have all these identifiable numbers, and you can identify everybody by a number, you say, well, these 5,000 people, these 5,000 children, we're going to randomly pick 1,000 numbers, and we're going to have them participate, pick another 1,000 and have them not participate for 6 months. You could probably do that. Again, it's probably not great for those children who aren't participating. They probably need these services. But you technically might be able to do random assignment. So you might be able to do an experimental type of design. Chances are you're probably not going to be able to do an experimental design because for most public programs, especially entitlement types of programs, you can't randomly assign. So if you can't randomly assign people to one group or another, you know, the participants, we usually call that the experimental group. So those people who are participating in the program, they're being exposed to our independent variable, the program. That's our experimental group. Those people who are not participating in the program, we usually call them our control group. So you'll hear people say, you randomly assign X number of people to an experimental group, X number to a control group. Experimental just means that they're being exposed to the independent variable, which here means they're participating in the childhood obesity prevention program. Control group means they're not participating. Oftentimes, you can't do that. So when you can't use an experimental type of design, there's another category known as the quasi-experimental designs. And quasi-experimental designs kind of look like experimental designs, except they don't have the random assignment. For most public programs, people tend to self-select whether or not to participate. And if people are self-selecting, they're deciding on their own whether or not to participate, you can't randomly assign them. You get what you get as a researcher. And if you can't randomly assign that they're self-selecting, you're probably going to want to use something more like a quasi-experimental type of design. The most common type of quasi-experimental design that we see used in public policy administration is a longitudinal time series. I don't know if you're exposed to that in your research methods class or not. It's called a longitudinal time series type of design. In a longitudinal time series design, we collect data on our variables over a period of time. So we might say, again, let's say that this program, we'll just say, was implemented in 2006. So we might say, we're going to do a quasi-experimental longitudinal time series. We're going to collect information on the obesity levels for, we'll say, 6 years before and 6 years after. So we'll collect that information from 2000 to 2006. The program's implemented in 2006. We'll then collect data from 2006 to 2012. That's longitudinal. Anytime you collect data from more than 2 points in time, you have what's called a longitudinal type of design. Longitudinal designs are nice because they allow you to see how the value, the scores of variables change over time. Obesity rates probably will change over time. You know, a child might be over the obesity level 1 year, and then the next year may be below it. So those rates tend to fluctuate. So it would be nice to have a long period of time that you can measure your data over. That's when a longitudinal time series would probably work really well. Here you could do that. You know, you might have to make an assumption, because I don't tell you when the program is implemented, but you can make those assumptions if you want. And so you can say, well, let's assume the program was implemented in 2006. I would propose a longitudinal time series. I'll collect data from 2000 to 2012, 6 years before, 6 years after, and measure obesity rates over that 12-year period of time.
Could you spell this design?
I wish I had a marker. I'll leave a marker here tonight. It's longitudinal.
Okay, we'll pen it.
So it's LONGITUDINAL. Longitudinal.
Okay.
I don't know where she was. There was one here last week. And kind of surprised because there aren't a lot of classes going on in here. But so longitudinal. And again, a longitudinal design just means you're collecting data over a period of time. That would, like I said, work here if you wanted to. You can make that work here. So your research design could be a quasi-experimental longitudinal type of design. Oh.